Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening, this is Love Sport Radio, and it is time for the Brentford Fan Show with the boys from Besotted. In the studio with me today, I have Dave Laney Lane, Matt the Allard Allard.
Evening.
And Gary GP Paul.
Evening.
Just love these nicknames, fellas. I tell you what, where do you get them from? Now, another narrow 1-0 defeat where history repeated itself once again, fellas. Lots of possession, lots of good football, little in the way of chances, and one mistake punished.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, one mistake. It was one of those games, wasn't it? Well, we seem to be having those games, and we've over history we've had those games, and then we have another one on Saturday, and we've had quite a few of them at the beginning of this season. And one little mistake. Was it a mistake? Whose mistake was it? You know, Janssen tries to play the ball to Norgaard. Norgaard's got his back to the play. They take the ball, and bang, we're 1-0 down, and suddenly it looks like we have a mountain to climb when we go 1-0 down at the moment. Previously, we've gone 1-0 down, and when you're scoring goals and that, you know, as long as it's in the first half, you're sort of thinking we're going to come back from it. But on Saturday, it felt like a big mountain to climb.
And it's almost like you know what the problem's going to be before you start. We're that predictable at the moment where our weaknesses are. It's clear that we are missing a number 9. We've spoken about this every week on this radio show and every week on the podcast. And, you know, on transfer deadline day, the two players that we seem to be in for, one was, you know, priced out of our what we wanted to pay for him. And the other one, you know, he flew back out to France with his 9 agents or whatever it was, the Iranian guy. So we're frustrated. You know, we've gone out into the transfer market the sort of out of contract market,
the pre-transfers, yeah.
The list of players that no one else wants.
Yeah, the very to be concerned about market.
Yeah. And Nikos Kourelis has come in last week. We'll speak about him a little bit later on, but you know, we need him to start scoring goals and playing that number 9 role for us. So yeah, Saturday was another really frustrating afternoon where keeping football out of football should have been the preferred route. We should have stayed in the pub before the game.
Or on the boat,
yeah.
So it was just the one shot, like you said. Charlton had that one chance. Brentford 21 shots, right? Just 4 on target, but a superior possession percentage as well. Had the better of the game?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely had the better of the game. The only thing the criticism at the moment is that teams are shutting us out too easily. You know, we started very well against Leeds last week. Then, you know, they kept us out and then took over the game. Again, there were just big parts of that game where we did not have any threat. Even when we went a goal down, we were kind of doing the same thing, and it was only a little later on when we did a little bit of a change that we started to kind of get the odd half chance. But we're still, you know, when you couldn't, you know, not being funny, beginning of last season we scored 5 in the first game. I mean, yes, all right, you could say players moved out, but we just don't look like scoring goals at the moment.
And, you know, 21 shots, but we didn't look like scoring 21 goals. They were, you know, speculative. They were, you know, from positions that weren't that dangerous. It was only in the last 5 minutes and a bit of injury time where we looked like we could get one in the net. And then they, you know, Charlton defended for their lives. So it's like banging your head against the wall at the moment. And, you know, but what we've come away from all of that thinking is that we're not massively broken. It's quite clear where the problems are, but it may not be a quick fix. It might still take a few more weeks yet.
Yeah, it seems like Ollie Watkins is making himself busy. He is creating chances. Brought a great save, by the way, out of Dylan Phillips. I mean, yeah, that was a fantastic save. he's getting in there. He is a striker in progress, I suppose you could say.
But one of my things is it's not all down to him, you know. You don't win the league because your striker scores. I mean, it helps if he scores 25 goals, but he doesn't need to score all 50 goals or however many goals you need to score in your 46 games, a lot more than 50, obviously. You know, so other players are allowed to score. He scored 2 goals already this season. Nobody else has scored. So he's on at the moment, if you look at it, 46 games, 2 out of 5. He's on for maybe 20 goals this season. That's not a bad return. Mm. We need some of the other players to score.
Well, that's a problem because we're averaging, what, 0.5 goal a game? That is going to cause you an issue.
But we have got, you know, Saeed Benrahma starting to play more of a part in these matches. And, you know, again, he's someone we've put a £25 million bounty on his head for. So it's someone, obviously, we know that is really potent at this level. We just need to have him out there scoring goals for us. So, you know, we're edging there. Saturday's a big afternoon. Saturday against Derby County. We have to start turning this around. You know, it's not. I mean, by no means is panic stations. We every year at this level, apart from one, we've had a run of games where things haven't gone right. But we've carried on doing the right things, and we're nowhere near the kind of downs as you know of the previous bad runs. We're just not firing in all cylinders at the moment, and I'm pretty sure that you know it will come right.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the fact that it is a big game against Derby next weekend, and we're only you know a handful of games into the season, but we're seeing this in the Premier League as well. We just had the Arsenal fan show, and the fact that they think that game against Spurs is massive, it always is, of course, but there's just more to it. You know, we're only a handful of games in, like I said, but this is already quite a big game at the weekend.
Well, the thing is, you pick up bad habits in football and you need to get rid of them very quickly. It's probably true in any sport. So, you know, if a batsman's not scoring runs, if a basketball player's not scoring baskets, we're not scoring goals and we're not winning games, and we need to change that before it becomes an issue.
Yeah, well, as per, you spoke to the fans after the game. Here's what Brentford and Charlton fans had to say after that 1-0 win for Charlton at the Valley.
No, it's not gelling. There's something badly missing there. I'm not sure. No momentum. There's no drive from midfield. No focus up front. I don't know. It's lacking something. They defended really well, I have to give them that. But, yeah, we didn't have the guile to unlock them.
I don't know what's quite happening. It's difficult. We've lost our presence in midfield. We lost a massive, massive influence in midfield with Sawyers. He was brilliant, made our team tick. We've got 2 new players in midfield, come from a different country. Neither of them have played recently. Feels like we're lacking massively. I've got to be honest, I'm not sure about Ollie Watkins as a centre-forward. You know, he tried hard today, but he doesn't have the hold-up play. We seem to lack coherence. I don't know, it's a bit worrying, if I'm honest.
I'm always a bit glass half empty because I'm a long-time Brentford fan. But I mean, I don't think we're relegation material, but I can't see a top-6 team out there at the moment, if I'm honest.
And I think once we've got Benrahma and Mococho back up to full fitness, then we could be seeing a different team. The key is that we've got to stick with this team. We've got to stick with the management. We've got to stick with the head coach. It's absolutely no good getting on everybody's backs. We've got to show our support because at times like this, we've all got to dig in and do the right thing. You know, the result today was disappointing. The result last Wednesday at Leeds was disappointing. But, hey, it will come right. I'm sure it will.
Absolutely. What, the finishing, you know, just clinical, where you need a striker. You need someone. I mean, there was a few instances where shots were put well over the bar, and they were good chances.
But I think we played fairly well. There were some disappointing players. I didn't think Norgaard and McCondis did a very good job. But other than that, all the players were good. And when Camo and Saeed came in, we actually played very well. We had very few shots on goals, to be honest, but except for the last 10 minutes or so. We had one, was that Canos? But other than that, we're losing a goal. We're not having a goal scorer, really, at this point, so we need one.
Well, it took the chance. You guys really, really need a forward. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, and you guys were very, very good. You actually play like we play. Actually played like we played on Wednesday evening, first half against Forest, passing the ball very, very well, but no end product. That's the problem for you guys. And you're right, we had one chance. We do feel like we got out of jail on that one, to be honest. But I thought you always looked threatening when you were coming into that last third, but you took a long time to get the ball in there, into the box, and then you didn't, and again, nothing doing with it. That, you know, kind of almost at certain times you almost looked like you were a bit scared to put the ball in there because you didn't really know what to do with it once it got in there.
Yeah, well, I'd rather talk about the beers and the view you and anything that you want to talk about that isn't the 90 minutes on the pitch.
And why is that?
It was kind of what we've seen at the start of this season, which is not bad, but not scoring goals and not winning games. Unfortunately, I wasn't at Middlesbrough, so all I've seen is draws and defeats, unfortunately. I'd say missing a striker, probably, or missing movement up further up the pitch. Maybe being a bit quicker in central midfield as well. With Norgaard, I'm not sure he's quite there yet. Jensen, the pace in which he turns and plays, I think could come, but it's not quite there yet either. And then just the sort of lack of sort of real attacking options. When Mococho and Benrahma came on together, significant difference, I thought. Much more sort of fluid movement up there. And then we just sort of decided to put all of the attackers on the pitch and give up with defending. And that gave us a bit of an outlet, but still not really clear-cut chances until the very end, where there was some heroic defending from Charlton, unfortunately. And when I remember what I was feeling like was we were going into the first game thinking this could really be a sort of a step up. This is a different calibre of Brentford. We might be playing with the sort of top two, getting into the playoffs. It sort of like feels kind of similar to essentially last season, or even the seasons before that, where we're looking at sort of 9th to 11th place, unfortunately. But in the grand scheme of things, and in the longer term, you still take that every day.
Wow. That is some reaction after that game. I tell you, you were busy after the game on Saturday. I think for me, no momentum, no drive, no guile, that stood out. Lacking coherence. Even the word relegation was mentioned. I know he followed it up by saying, well, not quite, but the fact that he even mentioned it is a bit concerning.
Yeah, it is really. And as I said just before we played that sort of, you know, that sound sequence was... we've been in these runs before. This is the 6th season at this level. We're not sort of masters, and we're not sort of massively experienced yet, I wouldn't say. And as fans, I think sometimes we're getting used to it. But we all have to kind of agree that during the course of a season, because of the standard in this division, things aren't always going to go your way. And especially when we've just sold our top striker and brought in so many players, it is going to take quite a while for everything to settle back down again. And, you know, obviously as a fan, I'm frustrated too. And it would be lovely if we could hit the ground running at the start of every season. That's what every fan of every club wants. But I don't think we're a million miles away. We've had a season, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when we brought in, you know, a lot of players, and we've been in this situation, as I said, where we're waiting for a lot of new players to kind of settle down. I don't see we're as weak as we were. I think we're maybe 2 or 3 games away from things being okay. But we do need to get this number 9 sorted out. Otherwise, it's going to be Groundhog Day, week in, week out. We're going to be saying the same thing.
Was there, I mean, from the notes that you guys have mentioned, was there a bit of noise, a bit of discontentment at the end of the game from the fans?
Yeah, there was, because people will always look and see that we spent a lot of money in the summer. Well, for Brentford, we have spent a lot of money. So I think it's a two-pronged thing. There's the money that we spent and the players that we lost. And that's the reality of the situation. We are Brentford. People are going to want our players. And, you know, if an agent's talking to a player and the player wants to go to the Premier League, we can turn around and say, well, stay with Brentford and you can get to the Premier League. However, when you're like 6 games in and you're not scoring goals and you're getting knocked out of the cup by Cambridge and things like that, becomes a bit of a harder sell.
I think also when you spend a lot of money, what comes of that is that means you've bought quite a few players. And, you know, they don't gel instantly. It's very unusual. Normally teams that spend money on 1 or 2 players in a transfer window, maybe 3, they'll come out firing, yeah? But when you've got, I think we had 5 or 6 new players playing at the beginning of this season and carrying on playing into Saturday, it does take a bit of time, you know. So I think you just have to give it a little bit of time. There's maybe things about the system we're playing, whether all the players that are out there suit that system, you know, and it just needs a bit of time to gel. I'm personally not in panic mode yet.
No, and you know, we had, let's not forget, two seasons ago we had a lot of people that were screaming that Neil Morpay wasn't up to the job and everything was going to pot, and you know, Brentford were going to get relegated, and you know, look what happened. And we do have to have faith and look back at recent history. It's not blind optimism. This is what happens. You know, we're not going to get it all our way. And yeah, I'm as frustrated as everyone else. And I'd like to be sitting in second or third or fourth place, thinking, right, this is only going to get better. But we're not sort of stranded at the bottom of the division, and things are going to get better. We've got some cracking players to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. Have faith. Have faith in the system. Have faith in Thomas Frank. We'll be hearing from him next.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Love Sport.
This is Love Sport on the Brentford Fan Show with the boys from Bisotti, Laney, the Allard, and GP. We are going to hear from Thomas Frank next to hear what he had to say about that game against Charlton.
I would say it's the second time where we dominated massively. We did that at Birmingham at home, and then now Charlton away. Both games we should comfortably walked away with 3 points. Did a lot of things right. Allowed the opponents only to have one chance throughout the game, which was our own fault. They haven't broken us down, any team, yet when we are defending, which you can see we've been really good defensively. But that offensive sharpness, quality, where it's just clicking, I can't hide it. We just need to work very hard on it. And that's what we do on the training pitch. Very demanding on the final pass, the quality, the touch, the finishing. But you can see, if you continue to do like this, everybody knows that it will turn around. But of course, this moment in time, it's frustrating when it's not just clicking, but that's football. We need to handle our emotions and our frustration, work hard and continue.
Yeah, that was Thomas Frank on the game against Charlton at the weekend. I have to say, we know it. Thomas Frank always very honest in his assessment. Can't really argue with what he was saying there, Matt.
He kind of backed up what we said, I suppose. Mm. And some people might not think that's a good thing, you know, that we're saying the same as Thomas Frank, but that's the first time I've heard that audio clip. I think it's blatantly obvious that we're not sharp in the top third of the pitch, but that's not just because of the number nine. Is, you know, there's several players operating in that area. And it's the sort of thing, you know, there's always an element of confidence, I think. And if you, the minute you start scoring goals, then it keeps going and going and going. And this is what I think we see, is we have a run where we have confidence and it's going great, and then we have a dip where we don't have confidence and it's not so good. And I think that's why we have these up and down. We don't have up and down games. You literally have up and down quarters of a season. And I do think it's partly confidence. And then when you don't have the confidence, you start to overthink it. And when you overthink it, it doesn't come naturally. And maybe we saw a bit of that on Saturday.
I mean, there is always a time to press the panic button. There is a time as a fan, there is a time for a club owner or a director of football to be going, right, this is not good enough. Everything's going to pot and we need to change the guy. We need to change the head coach. It isn't now. And there are fans that were kind of asking for that at the final whistle. And I know it's a long day and, you know, spirits are high, but you know, we haven't seen, if we'd have lost every single one of these games now, I don't think the people in charge of the club would still have the appetite for changing anything quite yet. You know, you can argue that we could or should have lost at Middlesbrough, but we didn't. You could argue that we were lucky to get a point against Hull, so we could have lost every single one of these games. But equally, we could have won three of those, and we should have got something out of Saturday. Probably Leeds, we didn't deserve much out of at all. That's probably the one you'd be disappointed with your end result. The rest of them, we've been in the game. So again, you know, it might sound really dull, but we're not a million miles away. And we do need the next game, and we do need things to improve. Otherwise, the pressure is going to start to mount. It's inevitable.
Well, I do feel it's similar to last year. It's quite funny because we keep losing games by one goal. Because last year we were like losing games 3-2 and things like that just because we made so many defensive mistakes. Now we've tightened them up and we can't score at the, you know, at the front. And I remember saying to a couple of guys the other day, it's managing Brentford seems like it's like the old act where they used to spin the plates on poles. You get the ones on the right going, so the strikers are looking fine. Then next thing, your defence is wobbling. Go down there, get those going, look back, and the strikers stop scoring.
And you know, and maybe that is something in the changes we've had, is that we've got players who are, we've got some quality defenders that have come in who are good defensive players. Arguably, they're not as good going forwards as Konsa, as Barbe. Barbe used to ping those balls. Konsa could come out, and we're not seeing that with any of the players yet, any of the new central defenders yet. So, you know, does that impact a little bit on how we are offensively?
Yeah, but I do think what we've seen so far should make it really obvious for the coaching staff to be able to correct it. I mean, it couldn't be any more glaringly obvious where the problems are. And I think the midfield, I thought by the end of the game with Mococho in there, we looked a more potent team coming forward.
Good to have him back.
Brilliant to have him back, yeah. And then obviously with Benrahma on the pitch, there are certain players that have fallen well short. Mokondes is one of those, I think, at the moment. Maybe he's going to have to, you know, he's going to have to sort of make way. We persisted with him for one game too many, or maybe not one game too many, but he's had his chance now, and he'll have to wait for another one on the bench. But there's enough bodies in that midfield. There's enough members in the squad for him to get the right combination. You know, again, for the 100th time tonight, it's the one at the top of the triangle that's the issue.
Yeah, Mokondes certainly has had his chances. Obviously, that chance on the opening day of the season when he hit the bar, and it seemed like the chance he had against Charlton, it seemed like an eternity for the ball to come down, just wasn't sharp enough. But that question of 2 goals in 5 games was one levelled to Thomas Frank after this one.
I would say 2 things. We conceded 4 and 5, which is very good if we keep that down, but of course need to score much more. Everybody can see that. But the chances we created, especially home against Birmingham and Hull and today, is by far enough to win all 3 games comfortably. So we just need to continue work hard on it, and that's things in life. Sometimes it's not easy. It's not easy at this moment in time, and just get it. You know, we don't get the easy goals, so we just need to continue.
Well, we might have an answer, chaps. Lainey, you did mention him earlier on. Nikos Karelis has come in, a free transfer. Not a bad goals record over the years, but he's had his problems with injuries. Quite a unit as well, this fella.
Yeah, he's a chunk. he's got very broad shoulders, yeah. Has that young man. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously had a slightly sketchy last couple of years. Genk obviously didn't want to keep him on, or he didn't want to re-sign for them. He's had cruciate ligament problems, but he's represented Greece at pretty much every single level. He's clearly got some calibre about him, and the DOFs have said that he has been on their radar for a little while. Obviously not top of the shopping list, let's be honest, otherwise they would have got him before the window. But we're pinning a lot of hopes on him. Marcus Force, there was some kind of rumour circulating after the game that he was going to be sent out on loan this week. That's not materialised as far as I know yet, and that we were scratching our heads wondering what on earth that would mean, if like the only fit natural centre forward we've got is sent out somewhere else. I mean, obviously he does need game time, and if they thought he was the actual answer at the moment, he'd be on the pitch. But I don't think that sends out the right message to have absolutely no options up top. So whether that was just a Chinese whisper or not, I don't know. But so Karelis, I don't know. I'm not sure. We were talking about this before. Do you think he's, what kind of part is he going to play, and how quickly is he going to be playing?
Well, I think you have to look at, I mean, De Silva joined us last season without a pre-season. It took him, I think, 6 to 8 weeks before he got a sniff of the first team. There were people saying he, you know, Karelis should have been on the bench on Saturday. I don't think that's realistic. I don't think we'll see him this weekend either. We got some form with this. You know, we had Josefsson came. He'd been injured. We took Odabajo back. He came off long injury. So we've done it before. We know how to do it, but it doesn't involve throwing them in there at the deep end with very little match fitness. It involves them going for a period of intensive, you know, training at at Brentford and us deciding when they're match fit. We could still be waiting a few weeks.
That's a really important point as well. We are very good at rehabilitation and reintroduction of players. You think about Scott Hogan, you know, he had a horrendous injury. Rico Henry's been out pretty much all the time. But, you know, shoulder reconstructions and knee reconstructions and all kinds of bionic nonsense that's been going on there. But, you know, so we do know when the right time is to reintroduce. So, again, I think they'll be the ones to judge that.
GP, I have to ask as to how much pressure he's going to be on Karelis coming in, because obviously there is a vacancy. We've discussed it on this podcast, like you said, and we've talked about it non-stop on the show ever since the show came back at the start of the season. But Brentford need a number nine. Karelis is going to come in and he is the player to fill that void. So there's quite a lot of pressure on him to deliver.
There will be. Remember when Marcondes first came over, because he'd scored a lot of goals in Denmark, and there was a lot, and I think it might have actually harmed him, the fact that he didn't score 22 goals in his first game. You know, not that we won that much, but yeah, there will be a lot of pressure on him. There will be a lot of pressure on the guy. We need to be careful, and I do think we need to temper our expectations. I think we need to temper our expectations with the season, the way it started so far, but with individual players as well.
Absolutely. Well, the news obviously this week has rumbled on with the Bolton and Bury situations currently on the, well, can we say liquidation? Very, very close to it, of course. We are going to be discussing that after the break.
This is Love Sport.
This is Love Sport on the Brentford Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, with the guys from Besotted. Delighted to say that we have got Mitchell, a Leeds United season ticket holder, on the line, who wants to speak about the game in midweek last week. Mitchell, how are you doing?
How are you? All right, mate.
Yeah, very well, thank you. What do you want to put to the boys?
Yeah, I just want to say how impressive we've been over the last two games. I've been very impressed with the character of the team. I think what we're seeing now from Leeds is, you know, a different kind of side to us, where last year it was very go at it. I think this year we're very, very constructive in the way we play. We don't just, you know, instantly press as such. We're not defensive as such, but we're waiting for that instinctive moment to come about. And obviously with the team that we've got, it really is quite enjoyable to watch at times with this high pressing intensity.
Sure, Mitchell. You are aware you've called the Brentford Fan Show, right?
Right.
So
who?
Anything in particular you wanted to say about the game last week?
Yeah, no, there's plenty of positives from both sides, actually. I think Brentford looked quite a good outfit. Definitely causes some issues in the first half with Watkins and Canos. But you could see that Brentford were lacking that killer instinct up front. And I think losing Morpé as they have, then it's a massive blow. You know, it's easy to take 20 million in off a striker as good as his qualities and then not replace him. As you've seen, you know, they've played Birmingham City on that first game and they've had a load of chances, hit the crossbar. They've missed some really good opportunities to win football matches, including that one against Charlton. But I thought overall Wednesday we had that one. I thought we were better side overall.
Yeah, Mitchell. So, I mean, in the second half, you know, Brentford didn't really come out and do much at all. Second 45. First, as you say, the first period, we did cause you a few problems. And, you know, especially sort of early on, we sort of like our passing seemed to be a bit quicker and slicker up the top. But did you feel like the goal was always going to come, or were the crowd starting to get a bit frustrated?
Well, I think the crowd were getting frustrated because, you know, I know Brentford are a very good side, and especially playing with the ball, you probably want to, up with Leeds, probably one of the best teams to do it, actually. And that's why I do quite like watching Brentford. I think with, obviously, the defence for me getting a lot stronger this year at Brentford, with Pontus Janssen obviously going to you guys. But no, obviously, of course, I think you're a very good side, ball playing side. And in a way, you're very similar to Leeds, but I think to beat Leeds, you know, there's only one thing that you have to do, and that's press at us. You know, if teams don't do it because they're a bit petrified to do it because of how good we are with the ball. But if teams do come at Leeds a bit more, that, you know, I think teams would cause us a few more problems. But, you know, teams when they come to Elland Road aren't going to get much this year. And that's not me being biased. It's just, it's such a fortress now, what we've got there. And under Marcelo, his methodology and his ways and means about things, it's very hard for teams to come. And like yourselves, you know, no offence to you guys, no disrespect or anything like that, but a team like Leeds United, you know...
I was waiting for the butt.
Yeah. Hopefully we should be turning teams over like Brentford.
Teams like
but
Brentford,
good luck
yeah.
for the rest of the yeah. season.
All right, cheers.
All Brentford need is a striker, and I tell you now, you'll be pushing for a playoff spot.
Cheers,
Simple
Mitchell.
As that.
Cheers, mate.
Nice Thanks. One, Mitchell. Thank you very much. That was Mitchell, Leeds United season ticket holder. Didn't know where he was going when he first started talking about Leeds United there,
chaps.
He got
the teams like Brentford in. The hashtag teams like Brentford.
Do you not like that must get to you? Don't like those.
We laugh about it, to be honest. Yeah. It's
where does that come from, that type of comment?
They believe that they should be beating teams like Brentford.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, now, Bolton Wanderers face one of the most crucial weeks in the club's 145-year history after they were left on the brink of liquidation today. We are going to speak to Paul the Proud Wanderer about the latest shenanigans from the Trotters. Paul, thank you for joining us. Paul?
Hello.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
It's good that teams like Brentford are interested, no?
Yeah, yes. Hashtag teams like Brentford, absolutely. talk us through the range of emotions you guys have been going through since the start of the season and, of course, after today's news.
Despair, more despair, disbelief and anything else beginning with dis, really. Mm.
It's tough times, isn't it?
Disenchanted.
So I mean, it's as a fan, it's your worst nightmare, isn't it? The threat of your club not existing anymore, you know. But this is
as a fan, you just feel impotent because there's not a lot you can do, not a lot Bolton fans can do. We're in the hands of an owner that hasn't really run the club very well and might prefer to take the option of liquidation than the offer that's on the table by the administrators.
And the football league at the moment, they seem to be giving you time, but you know, time's not something that, you know, a new football season really needs. You know, you need to fulfil fixtures, you need to fulfil your schedule this season. You know, it's not looking good.
The football league were giving time and really had belief in what they call integrity of the competition. The time would have run out before the start of the season, really. Mm. I mean, what good is it that Bury have had 6 games postponed? What good is it to Doncaster that we didn't play the game last week and this is a miracle and we do survive? When we finally play, then we'll have a decent team. It doesn't make a lot of sense, really. Either you can fulfil all your fixtures at the beginning or you can't, and that's the EFL... I don't think they've handled the situation very well, really. But then I think fans of Coventry or of Birmingham or of Blackpool or of Portsmouth would also think much the same, really.
I know you're not going to agree with this, and I certainly don't agree with this. But some people have said that before football clubs and the football industry. Before they wake up, clubs, it's going to take one or two clubs to go bust. Do you think?
Yeah, I kind of thought the same. Mm. Obviously, I wished it. Well, it's not going to be my club. I still wish it's not going to be my club. But it might take Bolton Wanderers to disappear for everyone else to wake up.
And we're playing a club.
Other people might think, well, that's a reasonable price to pay, but for me, it's far too high.
And we're playing a club on Saturday in Derby County that have just sold their ground to give them, you know, a way around FFP. So at the moment it may be working for them, but for a club like ours at the moment where we're constantly selling our best players to keep the books balanced, as it were, it's galling, you know.
Tell Coventry that was a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely.
You know,
so
it makes no sense. I mean, at our heart of it, whether you like Bolton Wanderers or you don't like us or whatever, at heart, the problem here is one of governance, ownership, really, and finances and structure. And either there's a more level playing field or financial doping will continue as it has for the last 10 or 15 years. And the more money in the game, I think... the more financial doping you'll get. And, you know, We're on the duff end of that.
I don't think there's any fan that kind of is worth the name would you know, whether they like Bolton or whether they like Bury or not, would want to sort of to see you as a fan base to go through what you're going through. But
well, there's a few in Tranmere that won't shed a tear, but never mind.
Well,
but do you think that is the case, Paul? Because it does feel
I've
like
just been on Sky Sports Twitter feed, and the number of people who are ha-ha-ha-ing goodbye Bolton Wanderers is, you know,
yeah,
well, it's thickening. But I'm sure if it was our old friend, the Leeds United fan, it was Leeds United going bust, then there'd probably be a few Bolton fans chortling along with that as well. So, you know, what goes around comes around.
Yeah, well, I guess so, to a certain extent. And you mentioned Twitter there. There was a tweet that has done the rounds this week, of course, that Alexis Sanchez earned £41 million in wages at United. A club like Bury need £2.7 million just to exist. Do you think there is a responsibility from the Premier League to get involved here?
Well, there isn't legally, but there is. I think there is morally. But then, you know, a discussion on morals in football would be a very short discussion indeed, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it must say, your time in the Premiership, which wasn't that long ago, it must seem an eternity away now. It must seem like it's...
Some idiot tweeted we were top of the league 8 years ago, and it's like, shut up, I don't need to know that.
Paul, the proud
but there
wonder.
You go. I mean, where Bolton Wanderers are, maybe, you know, maybe Stoke are behind us. I mean, Stoke, if I was a Stoke fan, I would be very, very worried.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate your time this evening.
Yeah, good luck.
No worries, guys. Have a good season.
Cheers. What do you make of that one, gents? It's tough, isn't it?
It's really tough. It makes you feel very grateful. And it also makes you kind of reflect at 10, 15 years ago when things weren't looking great for us at all. We were rattling buckets outside Griffin Park until Bees United came along and got us organised and started running the club. You know, we look back to the dark days of David Webb and the debt that Ron Knowles left us in.
Even a lot of people say the demolition of the Royal Oak done for financial reasons.
Yeah, I mean, Brentford have... You know, obviously, we've never been a rich club by any stretch of the imagination, but we've always seemed to have made sacrifices to balance the books. As you say, you know, we knocked down the biggest stand. You know, it held sort of 15,000-18,000 people, and it meant we probably would never have had to have moved if we still had that space there now. But we sacrificed that land to build flats on to stay alive. So we seem to have kind of managed our debt to a better or lesser extent within our means. We've certainly, and not until this transfer window just gone, started spending big money on transfer fees, but we've done that because we've got huge transfer fees coming in. So we haven't sort of sold the family jewels, and we certainly haven't sold the stadium to fund it. So it's kind of, yeah, careful.
Yeah, I don't know if, I mean, I wouldn't, there have been times where we've not been sustainable by any stretch of the imagination, and there have been times where we've come close, and, you know, to being in a similar perilous position on, you know, two occasions. It's just pretty desperate, isn't it? I mean, I my heart bleeds really for football fans when there's potential to lose your club, because, you know, and I know I see on Twitter people sort of saying, Bolton Wanderers, but I mean, really... Football fans, I don't get it.
No, I don't buy into what he's saying. I don't endorse that theory that fans haven't clubbed together with this. I think there's probably a few numpties on social media who are just saying, yeah, we don't want people there. But I do think, and you guys are a great testament to this, that you have a great relationship with opposing fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing, I mean, again, I think a lot of the Twitter stuff can be dismissed. I mean, I know we mentioned, obviously, the Sanchez thing. And the thing is, that's just putting a plaster on a laceration. It's not actually solving the issue. The issue is, yes, probably the best thing you can do is have a much more even distribution of the money in the game. That's not going to happen.
But GP, you know, you sent that link to the article that the Bolton chairman had written 10 years ago, calling for basically a breakaway of the top two divisions and no relegation. So it's kind of like there wasn't a lot of kind of holistic kind of like for the better of the whole game.
But I remember reading a book when they were talking about the formation of Premier League and the teams like Luton and Notts County that voted for it and never actually played in it because they were shown the riches they could have, but nobody actually said, but what if you get relegated? That's what I mean. 10 years ago, Phil Gartside looked at that and thought, yeah, that could happen. That could happen because you had teams like Portsmouth with people putting in a lot of money. Leeds, somebody, you know, a sheikh could come and put money into Leeds, the size of that club. That club could go somewhere. And you've got teams like Wigan and Bolton that were in the Premier League, whose existence then becomes somewhat shaky.
Yeah, very well. Very good point. Sorry, GP. Well made. It's a Brentford fan show on Love Sport. We've got about 11 minutes to go.
Love Sport.
Yeah, this is Love Sport, the Brentford fan show on Love Sport with the boys from Besotted. Now, I'm sure everybody listening watched Ben Stokes. A redemption of sorts for Ben Stokes in winning that third test against Australia. They now go into the fourth test, one apiece. The Ashes is up for grabs. Now, gents, you've been putting some tweets out about one-man wins for Brentford, moments where a player has single-handedly done the club some good. And Matt, you've got some replies.
Yeah, there's a few here. There's Tony Berg said Owusu against Southend, the away game. Do you remember that? That was the hat trick. I think it was, yeah. That can kind of fit in this. It wasn't so much back to the wall, but it kind of felt like a one-man.
Yeah, he was unplayable that day.
There's also Anthony Hanlon said about Alan Judge for about 6 months. He literally carried the team, and I can see something in that. I don't know if there were specific games, but there was that period where, you know, everything was focused around Alan Judge to the point where it almost became too much, and all the other players. Yeah. You know, Alan Judge was literally here, there. He was everywhere. Then we tried to play him up front. And that's where it kind of ended when we played him up front against QPR. There was that. Some talk about Hotter. Hotter had that period. The game against Rotherham at Griffin Park in 2017. So that was from Richard Eden. I think the interesting one, and this maybe is a bit more like the sort of the backs of the wall stuff, is Mickey G said Charlie McDonald, MK Dons.
Oh, yeah, that game, that was absolutely freezing, and Brentford were just not at the races at all. And to be honest, it was very similar to what we've been doing for the last couple of weeks, where they had all the ball, we were sitting in the away end, couldn't see a thing, everything's down there, and then all of a sudden the breakaway goal, like with minutes to go.
Yeah, I also, actually, you know, it's a slightly different perspective, but the one where we came back from, if you take Ben Stokes out of it and just say that England had lost, I was trying to explain to somebody what this game would have looked like if it was a football match. Just somebody nothing about cricket, never watched cricket in their life. I said, we're about 6-0 down at half time. Yeah, and that's kind of where we were, going into that last innings. About 6-0 down at half time. And I suppose the game that I remembered, where we were definitely not going to get anything out of it, was 2-0 down at home to Ipswich. I think it was first game of the season. And we're now into injury time. And somehow we end up with a 2-2 draw with Tarkowski scoring in the 90th plus 6th minute or something like that. So that's kind of, that for me is an example of when we weren't going to get anything out of that game. Probably half the people had left.
And really, I mean, that's always, you know, the Stokes performance yesterday for England and having a player that just, it epitomises that never, ever give up, never say die. Whatever the score is, you're always going to believe you still can win. And as you said, it's the equivalent of that was, like, as you said, 6-0 down, and then you win 7-6 with 9 men in the last minute. It was like, we'll probably never see anything that matches that exactly.
No, I would have thought so.
But Matt, the nearest thing we really got to that was the Great Escape under Martin Allen.
Yeah, so 2003-2004 season, we're in the relegation zone. Wally Downs goes and Martin Allen turns up from Barnet. Not the first time he'd left Barnet, not the last time he'd leave Barnet, obviously.
And another very fiery character.
Yeah, and another fiery character. And you can, and there is something of Martin Allen and Ben Stokes. You know, you can see some, although Martin Allen wasn't out on the pitch doing it, he was directing stuff. And then he came in and it was the Great Escape. You know,
but the thing is, because I remember hearing an anecdote how he said he turned up and saw some fans the night before his first day, and he said they looked down on the ground, and he was like, "We are going, you know, we're going to survive, and we're going to, you know, I'm here now, we're going to keep you up." And it did almost seem like that.
And it was the first game as well. Dagenham and Redbridge? They turned up and
they turned up late, Rushden and Diamonds.
I think it was.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They turned up really late, and Martin Allen had all the players out on in front of the fans, warming up for about 25 minutes, really whipping the crowd up. So we were all waiting for it. So the bonding had started by then. We won that game 3-2, and then it was again real nail biting. And then I think we won 4, did we? 1-4, drew 3. And then there was the one defeat up at Grimsby, which...
Yeah, I mean, and I almost drew a parallel with the missed stumping, because it was almost like Grimsby beat us 1-0, and I think it was on Bank Holiday Monday.
And Grimsby were in there as
they
well.
They were in there, weren't they?
They were in the relegation.
We've sat there, we've lost, and it's like, is that it? Is the great escape over? And then they're celebrating on the pitch, saying, ah, waving at us and that.
Yeah, they were probably waving at us, and you know the gesticulation.
They weren't waving properly, were they? I think their hands might have been the wrong way around, they weren't using all their fingers. But.
All right, so it wasn't a goodbye then. So it was like that missed stumping yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. So it was almost we've got this for them, and then we had obviously the final day, and you know, was just an amazing day, and you felt it was going to happen. So people weren't really, you know, there was a bit of nervousness, but I don't think people were really down and thinking, we're down. People really, because of the way that Martin Allen picked the team up, we did think we were going to get out of it. There was still that little bit of doubt, but we thought we were going to win it. And then when it was Alex Rhodes that scored with about 8 minutes to go, which meant that we were safe. And I always remember right at the end, everybody's on the pitch and somebody lifted Alex Rhodes up on his shoulders, and Alex Rhodes had this look of, oh my God, I'm about to die. and I saw him, looked at him, just saw the sheer horror in his face. I was like, get him down quickly. and he was like, oh, thanks.
I think Ben Stokes looked like that every time Jack Leach faced a ball, didn't he?
I think we all were.
He wouldn't even look, you know. He looked like he was sort of going through all sorts of, you know, terrible times, didn't he? Yeah. But, you know.
That's something I don't really want to go through again. I'm quite happy never to have another relegation battle in my life.
No, yeah, me too.
I do have one, and it's quite a loose one, really, a bit of a straw clutcher. But it'd kill me if I didn't mention it. 2010, League Cup against Everton. A goalkeeper had quite an inspired performance that night. Mr. Richard Lee.
Yeah. And I suppose there's something in that as well, is that, you know, you're playing this team, I don't think we ever felt we were down and out. I quite fancied penalties that night. But that night was sort of, yeah, Richard Lee's night, wasn't it? And if it wasn't for him in that short span of time, that penalty shootout, then yeah, for sure. It was that was quite a night, that one.
It was quite a night, and he was a really good goalkeeper for us as well.
Was he? Because I never really saw much of his career at Brentford, but he speaks so highly of his time there, and he'll be in tomorrow morning, and I'll definitely mention this to him when he's in. But, yeah, in terms of the fans' take on Richard Lee as a goalkeeper for Brentford, what was that?
He had a sticky start, didn't he? Because he came in, and in a pre-season friendly...
Chesney had been the goalkeeper the season prior, right?
And then they went and didn't Andy Scott then bring Ben Hamer back, and which kind of, you know, it was the old, well, hold on, we've got 22 goalies now. what's going on?
Yeah, no, I think Brentford fans look back at Richard Lee with very fond memories. I don't think there's not a kind of, oh God, about him whatsoever.
He's a good example of where we said it about Mopé already this evening. He's another good example of where people wrote him off very quickly. And he came back,
and
that night he became a hero.
I was absolutely gutted when he did his shoulder and missed Wembley, though.
Yeah, he was as well. He also moved to Fulham, which he got a bit of stick for on Twitter.
Late
in his career.
Yeah, so he should.
Yeah, we're not taking that back.
Yeah.
What a great way to end the show. This has been the Brentford Fan Show on Love Sport with the guys from Besotted, the Allard, GP and Laney. Thank you very much for joining me, gents. We'll be back same time, same place next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.